here in England, it has definitely heated up. We have got temperatures of 34 degrees Celsius today, the day I'm recording. That's Thursday. And I, for one, have been parched while I've been outside in this glorious weather. But we're not the only ones we should be thinking about. Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 61 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to be talking about water in the garden and kind of water features, but I'm not particularly going to concern myself with the sort of thing that you plug in and it might create a waterfall or a rill or things like that, as lovely as they can be. We're going to be talking about just places in the garden where we're going to create spaces that hold water for ourselves and for the wildlife that's around. But there's a very good reason why we would want to do this. It's not all altruistic at all. We're going to do this for our own benefit. So that's going to be what we're talking about today. Before I get stuck right in, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to a couple of people that have left reviews for us on Apple iTunes. The first one is from Hitch, who's left a 5-star review saying great info on a variety of subjects with a heavy emphasis on personal food security. Yep, I agree with that. And thank you so much for that generous review. The second of one is from Yurt Loving. I live off-grid in East Yorkshire and I have learnt a lot from the show. Keep them coming. Thoroughly enjoying both the YouTube channel and the podcast. Again, thank you ever so much for those reviews. Just so you guys are aware, Apple iTunes, when you leave a review, it's only visible in your zone. So I can only see reviews that are left by people here in the UK. But that doesn't mean wherever you're leaving them isn't valuable to me. So I really, really appreciate them, even if I can't see them. They do help to spread the word in your area. And if you'd like a shout out on the show and you're not in our area but you've left a review, then just send us a copy of it at our email address, which is selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. And you will undoubtedly get a shout out on the show. As always, I really do love hearing from you guys. Whenever we get correspondence emails or people get in touch on Facebook, it's an absolute pleasure. So don't be shy. Please do reach out. So, water. Why is it important for us to create habitats that have water in our gardens? Well, I'm kind of linking one podcast that was released very recently to another one that is going to be coming out in the next few days. And the first one was our episode dealing with slugs. And I just wanted to say, you know, one of the main tools in our arsenal against pests, and it's not just slugs, but against all pests, is to encourage a healthy predator-prey environment within our gardens. So whatever pests it is you're dealing with, if we create environments that encourage the predators of those pests, then it means that our pest problem is always kind of kept on top of. And introducing places where animals have access to water is a really, really important part of that process. So maybe you've got a slug problem. I think if you don't have a slug problem, then chances are it's because you've made some of the steps that we're going to talk about today. But if you do have a slug problem, then the best way to keep on top of it is to strike that balance between predator and prey within your garden. And one of the best ways to do that is to encourage the predators of those slugs with the sort of wet spaces that we're going to be talking about today. But there are lots of pests within our garden that are going to be eaten by things like birds, hedgehogs, amphibians. These are all things that we really, really want to encourage in our garden. So we're going to start with some really, really simple things. First of all, just bird baths. Now, they can look beautiful, they can look ornamental. You can spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds buying some reclaimed, ornate piece of stone. And if that is what fits with your budget and your taste, then fantastic. More power to you. Go out and do that and put it in place. But if your taste and budget doesn't align with that, then don't be shy about using a plastic bowl buried in the ground or placed up high, depending on what it is you're trying to attract, that's going to hold the water, because the birds don't care. They don't care the style or shape or the material that we use. They just care that there is a water source. And at the moment, there is no standing water around, and there's less and less water held within the plants that a lot of these animals are foraging in, and they're becoming more and more in need of us to provide it, because the summer's rolling around. Right now, we're in the middle of a very, very hot spell here in the UK. As I mentioned in the intro, it was 34 degrees today, which for us is very, very hot. And I've already noticed today we've had a lot of activity around our bird baths, and just being able to create these, effectively all they are is puddles. From a bird's point of view, they're just puddles, but we're able to maintain them because they're within our garden. So that's the first thing, is just to have some bird baths. Now, where you place them is down to you, obviously, but it's going to come down to a few factors. And one is aesthetics. If you're going to want something that is a feature, then it's going to want to sit somewhere that is beautiful to look at. But also where it is you actually want the creatures that you're trying to encourage into your garden, where you want them to congregate, where you want them to focus, where you want them to head for when they arrive. You can find Self-Sufficient Hub content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel. We also have our website. And now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out. Now, obviously, the biggest areas that we're going to tend to find problems with slugs and pests like that are going to be in our annual vegetable bed. So that's certainly an area where we made the decision to congregate most of our wet spaces. Our biggest pond is probably within 10 meters of our annual vegetable bed. Now, amphibians are something that's super easy to attract to your garden. Any pond that's down at ground level is going to attract amphibians. We've already seen newts and lots of frogs in our garden. Now, the main pond, the pond that I'm referring to right now, is the pond that I've referred to several times as an ongoing disaster that has not been completed. It's a project I started a bit early, or rather started when I wasn't really equipped with the resources to complete, although I thought I was, and it turned into a rumbling issue that's not quite resolved, although I do have a plan now that we're going to have it finished, certainly in place for next spring. But we also have another pond. There was another pond that was already here when we moved in, and that is teeming with newts and frogs, and we see them all over our property. So what we're trying to do is encourage them to spend more and more time near the annual vegetable garden, because that's obviously where we're going to want them to be doing their great work with our slugs. So that's where I would recommend that you have at least one water feature, but it doesn't have to be a pond. As I said, it could be something very, very small, but definitely now, I'm not so much talking about bird baths. I am talking about something at ground level. Now, bird baths are something that we tend to put a bit higher, but we can put something similar. It doesn't have to be a pond, something similar, the size of a bowl or bigger, at ground level. And that's going to be just something where our ground animals can drink, even if it's not somewhere that is necessarily going to be big enough for amphibians to breed in. It's going to be somewhere things like hedgehogs can come and get a drink. And making our gardens friendly to these animals that we want is just common sense. It's something that we should definitely be thinking about. And we can use our rainwater catchment systems and our guttering downpipes and all these kind of things that we're already probably thinking about and putting in place. We can use these at the same time to hook up to our ponds and watering holes to allow them to be constantly filled and preferably within distance of a water butt, so we can just top up, particularly the smaller ones, as we go. The smaller the volume that it's going to hold, the quicker it's going to dry out in the really, really hot weather. So if you're going for something small, like a bird bath type thing, even if it's not a bird bath, even if it's down on the ground and it's for hedgehogs or whatever it might be, we just need to be aware that if it's small, we're going to need to top it up in the hot, hot weather. So you want it somewhere near a water butt or somewhere near a source of water at the very least. Now, if you're lucky enough to have a stream or a river running through your property or near it, then we can also make the bank of that stream or river just hospitable for animals to get down to. If it's quite a steep bank, we might be able to possibly put a little ramp down or some other kind of system of diverting the water into a shallow area where animals can have access. That's really going to help. If you're not lucky enough to do that and you want a more substantial area of water, then we're talking about ponds. Now, a pond doesn't have to be particularly big, just a couple of meters by a meter is a really nice size for a wildlife pond. And the main mistake a lot of people make when digging a pond, if it's for a wildlife pond as opposed to a fish pond, if it's a fish pond, it's a bit different. But the biggest mistake people make for wildlife ponds is they just dig the sides too steep. What you really want is really, really shallow sides so that you could almost get a foot or more into the pond and it only be a couple of inches deep at the most. That's where almost all of the initial inhabitants of a pond are going to spend their time. Tadpoles are going to spend all their time in the really, really shallow water around the outside. And so are a lot of the beetles and flies that are going to lay their larvae in the water. They're going to want that really shallow bit. A lot of the time when people talk about digging ponds and they say about digging it deep, they're coming at it from one of two areas. They're either thinking about oxygenation and enough water to hold the oxygen. They're more thinking about fish in that regard, and they can have a point there, but if you have the right plants in, then that's going to oxygenate itself. And the other thing they're thinking about is it freezing. And of course, that little bit of depth can help it to not freeze solid. So you may well want a little bit of depth in the middle, but it really doesn't have to be more than a foot or so deep to not freeze solid in the winter, unless you're living in some of the harsher environments in places in Russia or Canada that could possibly freeze a pond more than a foot deep. It's very rare that you're going to need to worry about that. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficientherb. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So So the easiest way to install a pond is just to use some kind of plastic or rubber liner. Now, the beauty of using a liner like this is it allows you to dictate the slopes at the side and allows you to construct a pond exactly to your requirements, the size you want, with all the dimensions being exactly what you want. Now, the downside is for us, we wanted to keep geese and ducks in our pond, and the geese, it didn't seem to matter without spending quite a lot of money on a liner, which I didn't have. The liners weren't thick enough to put up with the geese's claws. So what we now are doing, this is the solution that I was talking about earlier on in the episode. What we're going to do now is, because we've got all the digging done, we've got three ponds and they're all beautifully terraformed, if you like. The layout and everything is exactly as I want it. So what we're going to do now is we're going to put a cheap plastic liner in like we did before. But then what I'm going to do is I'm going to use sand and cement and some stones, and I'm effectively going to lay a patio, if you like, straight on top of the liner. Very, very thin. I'm going to use the mortar directly against the liner. So that's going to protect it from being pierced from the stones that I then lay straight down on top of that mortar. So that's going to allow me to create the shapes I want, but at the same time protect that liner from damage from the claws of our birds. So that's the method we're going to use. And we're going to use a little bit of sand to blind the ground underneath the liner to stop stones and stuff piercing it from that side. But there are lots of things you can do to create a pond for little or no money at all. So the first way is how I said, basically you can just use a plastic liner, and depending on the size of your pond, you can use anything, even a bin liner. But it's really easy to come across a piece of tarpauling or some similar, what we would call in the construction industry, DPM, damp-proof membrane, which is a 1200 or thicker gauge plastic that you can use. If you speak to your local builders, I'm sure you'll be able to come across offcuts, which would be several meters across. So you could use something as simple as that, and you just lay that out over your pit that you've dug, and you place some sods of turf around the outside or some stones or however you're going to weigh it down, and then fill it with water and then place some stones around the outside to cover up the liner or however it is you're going to form that edge. But that's a way of doing it that really doesn't cost very much money at all. You can also get pond liners, the solid ones, the ones that are made of fiberglass. If you keep your ear to the ground, you quite often come across them that people are actually getting rid of because for whatever reason they've changed their mind about what they want to have in their garden. So you can pick them up on a lot of the recycling sites online. I've certainly seen them on FreeCycle in the past, which is a site I quite often mention. Another idea I actually quite like the idea of is a raised pond using a tire, like a tractor tire preferably, but any old tire, where you'd lay the tire on the ground and you would cut the inner portion of the ring that's at the top. So you've effectively got a side that goes all the way around that folds in at the bottom, but the top bit that folds across is cut away. And then you would put your liner within that, fill that with water, and then you would stack some stones or something decorative around the outside to allow things to get up and down to the pond. Now that's not going to be perfect for a lot of our wildlife, but it's a nice idea and a nice way of doing it. You can also build ponds within a sort of raised bed system. So you could build a raised pond in much the same way as you'd build a raised bed, either within your raised beds or separately to it. There's lots of different ideas. I mean, the main thing for me is that there is somewhere that wildlife can access water within the garden, and as many places as possible, really. The other thing is just to bury things, bury something that holds water. Now, that could be an old bathtub, it could be an old sink, it could even be an old bucket or any plastic container. Obviously, the bigger the better. Quite often, as a builder, I come across old water tanks that people have taken out of their loft when they have updated their heating systems. So anything like that can be incorporated as part of a pond build. Just the limiting factor here with things like that is going to be the actual design, and getting those sides nice and shallow isn't always quite so easy when you're going to be burying something of that nature. So that's just something to bear in mind. It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self-Sufficient Hub group and the Self-Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show. Now, I did mention earlier that this podcast is kind of a segue between one from last week and one from next week. Now, last week we did a podcast on slugs, and obviously a large portion of the emphasis behind wanting ponds and water features is about getting that predator-prey balance right. So there's a whole system of thought processes that tie together here. So we're going to introduce a pond to make sure that we're encouraging the predators that we want in our garden. Great, okay. And then we've got a pond, but it doesn't have to stop there, because once we've got a pond, we've also created another habitat within which to grow food. So we're going to be doing an episode next week on edible ponds. And I just wanted to mention how this is just indicative of how we can always be thinking about our gardens. I know I'm always going on about marginal gains and just making slight nudges in the right direction, but this is another one of those areas where we just, by tying our thinking together all the time, we're going to be constantly creating different ways in which we can increase yields and reduce work. And this is yet another example of that. So by having a little pond somewhere in our garden, we're going to reduce the amount of work from pest control, and we're going to increase our yields by, again, not having those pests be quite so prevalent in our garden, but also by introducing new environments within which we can grow crops. Now, the idea of producing food with water isn't particularly new, but there are so many ways in which people are using it now. There's aquaculture systems, and we are, that's the purpose of, or the one of the main purposes of the pond that, ponds that we've built, is to create an aquaculture system. So that's something we're going to be talking about next week in one of next week's episodes. And I just wanted to mention it here that the way we're always able to be thinking about tying all of our systems together is just something that we can always be using to grow and learn. And you know as well as I do, you don't need to wait for me to tell you, there's always things that we can see that we can take advantage of. And this is just a fantastic example, because this is something we can use to take advantage of while at the same time doing our bit to protect the natural species that need our help and are quite happy to pay us back at the same time. So it's a no-brainer, you know. The last thing I wanted to mention, actually, about ponds that's just occurred to me is that they can be a great use if you've got a soggy or boggy area in your garden. If you turn that area into a pond, then rather than having this area that's not really particularly utilizable, you have an area with much greater utility that you're going to be able to grow things in, and that is going to look great and is going to serve all these other purposes at the same time. So it can be a way of actually making an area of ground much more fertile. So that's just another reason to put one in. I hope you've found lots and lots of different ideas from today's episode, and I'd be delighted if you got in touch and told us about your pond or water feature or what you're doing, particularly if you've got some ideas that you think I haven't covered. Then I'd love to hear from you and get in touch to help me grow my knowledge as well. That would be great. So otherwise, until next time, take care and I'll speak to you soon. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon. Utilizable. I mean, that's not a word, is it? What an idiot.